Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 429, titled Triumph of the Shill, being recorded on October 13th of 2003. Before we get to the main subject material, do note that this is obviously a very pedantic broadcast format. I understand that, and one of the things that I've done to help balance that out is to put together very long, detailed, annotated description of each For the Record program. There are now hundreds of detailed annotated descriptions. They're in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. Spitfire List is one word, and listeners are strongly encouraged to visit the For the Record section. Use the descriptions, either if you have a tough time following this very linear and pedantic format, and it is both, and or, and I emphatically encourage people to do this, to use the media, use the internet, take excerpts from the material going directly to the sources and citing the sources, not yours truly, and call talk shows, write representatives, elected representatives, contact the media, use the internet, use this remarkable tool called the internet, and in particular, the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. As well, the For the Record section of the Spitfire website is linked to two URLs maintained by the heroic sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey. There is a streaming website at which more recent FTR programs are streaming. That is at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. And there's a longer URL with all of the rest of the For the Record programs available for download only. That's linked both to the WFMU website and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website as well. The most recent pair of recorded half-hour segments of For the Record are posted on the Real Audio-equipped Spitfire website for roughly a week or so after the recording of the program. Now, 429, FTR 429, is titled after the famous Nazi documentary film Triumph of the Will by Leni Riefenstahl. Some younger listeners may not be aware of that film, but it was a major propaganda vehicle for Adolf Hitler, and Leni Riefenstahl recently and mercifully, the creator relieved the earth of her presence recently. She passed away at the sadly old age of 101. She was a major propagandist for Adolf Hitler, and as is often the case, she then made emphatic excuses for what she did. But her documentaries, Triumph of the Will, about a major Nazi Party rally at Nuremberg, and Olympiad, about the 1936 Berlin Olympics, were major artistic triumphs for Adolf Hitler, and in particular his use of cinematic technique to market the Nazi zeitgeist was a very, very effective tool, and it was Leni Riefenstahl who placed that tool in Hitler's hands. On the Spitfire website, there is a photograph of Arnold Schwarzenegger taken from Sports Illustrated magazine of December 7th, 1987. It's from the Joe Weider collection. It's on page 84. The article itself is called Pecs Sell Ticks by Dan Gerringer. That picture in many ways embodies what I think has been an updated American pop culture marketing of the basic advertising shtick that was attached to Adolf Hitler. He was portrayed as the everyman, the common person who, through strength of will and spirit, basically propelled himself to the top of the German nation and was going to lead the Aryans into their triumph in the future. That was the triumph of the will. The Schwarzenegger image has been marketed in very much the same way, I suspect, and this is conjecture, I suspect that this was determined some time ago. The networking behind Arnold Schwarzenegger is discussed at great length in the descriptions for FTR 421 and 422. You can listen to both programs on the WFMU.org/Dave Emery streaming website. In the descriptions, there is supplemental documentary evidence, and they are longer and, for quoting purposes, probably a little more accessible for most people. So do use those. There appears to be some very serious long-term marketing behind Arnold Schwarzenegger. This is not to diminish his own very hard work in his bodybuilding career, but there are a lot of people who work very hard at a lot of things, and they don't necessarily wind up where Arnold Schwarzenegger is. And I suspect that his American dream persona, very consciously and explicitly marketed as such, by the way, and his marketing persona of being the small guy who, through simply hard work and dedication, rose to the pinnacle of power, that is very much like the triumph of the will marketing of Adolf Hitler, who, in fact, was elevated by some very, very powerful interests, and because of his common, unquote, stature, was viewed as an ideal front man. He was also an excellent public speaker. In fact, Arnold Schwarzenegger has been fronting for some very, very powerful interests, and the perversion of the concept of the common man or the common person into a vehicle for effecting the purposes of great power and very cynical power is not unlike the way some of the power elite of Germany selected Adolf Hitler from among a number of other potential political power brokers. And what we're going to be looking at in this program are the interests that Schwarzenegger has been shilling for, how the media, how the opinion-forming media, as it is characterized in the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk that I've used in the past, was used to market Arnold Schwarzenegger and to present him in a context of being something other than what he is, which is a shill for some very powerful interests. And what we're going to be looking at in this program is just how the events in the California recall election came to be effected, and we're going to be analyzing the triumph of the shill. The first article is from the San Francisco Chronicle of September 27th of 2003. One of the ways that Schwarzenegger was able to market himself and able to exploit the political vulnerabilities of the California electorate was by singling out some of the small California Indian tribes that have acquired a lot of wealth, at least relatively speaking, through Indian casino gaming. This was marketed in what I think is something of a chauvinistic fashion. It also was very cynical in light of some of Arnold Schwarzenegger's contacts. Again, San Francisco Chronicle, Saturday, September 27th of 2003. This article is by Mark Martin of the Chronicle Sacramento Bureau. It's headlined, Schwarzenegger Advisor Linked to Card Clubs, Las Vegas Casinos. It reads in part as follows. A top political advisor to Arnold Schwarzenegger serves on the board of directors of a company that owns two Las Vegas casinos and has interests in two Southern California card clubs that compete with casinos run by California Indian tribes. Schwarzenegger has made attacking tribes and their political influence a major tenet of his campaign, prompting the actor's top Republican opponent in the recall election and a tribal gaming group to raise conflict of interest questions about Schwarzenegger Friday. At issue is Bonnie Reese, R-E-I-S-S, a longtime Schwarzenegger ally who has taken an increasingly public role in his bid to be governor. Reese earns $30,000 a year as a director of Pinnacle Entertainment. The company owns casinos in Reno and Verde, Nevada, and earns money from leases on two California card clubs, including the Hollywood Park Casino, located in Inglewood of Los Angeles County, and one of the largest card clubs in California. Quote, clearly he's got a bit of a conflict, said Jacob Coyne, executive director of the California Indian Nations Gaming Association, again quoting, he's blasting the tribes very publicly and, on the other hand, quietly receiving political advice from someone with a major interest in a business that competes with us, shilling for gaming interests that are competing with the Indian tribes, who were the focal point of much of Schwarzenegger's campaign ire. In For the Record program 422, we discussed the fact that Schwarzenegger was meeting with, among others, Kenneth Lay, the CEO of Enron and a very close Bush ally, in May of 2001 at the Peninsula Hotel in L.A. The the irony of that, and really the cynicism of that is consummate, because of course, as we've looked at in For the Record 280, and then again in For the Record 420, the energy companies, including Enron and other Texas-based firms, were deliberately destabilizing California by manipulating the deregulated California electricity market that was affected by Pete Wilson. That's the Republican governor, Pete Wilson, who was Arnold Schwarzenegger's campaign manager and has now emerged as the chief spokesman for Arnold Schwarzenegger. Basically, Schwarzenegger is a shill for the interests behind Pete Wilson, and beyond that, George Bush. Still more cynical is what is revealed in an article that was authored by Greg Palast, one of the more incisive investigative reporters, one of the only real investigative reporters left on the scene. Many are familiar with Greg Palast and his Best Democracy Money Can Buy book. On his website at www.gregpalast.com, GREGPALAST.com, there's an article from Friday, October 3rd of 2003. Many listeners are aware of this. I will cover this just to make sure that people are aware of it. Arnold unplugged. It's hasta la vista to $9 billion if the governor is selected. The article reads in part as follows. Skipping down, the wannabe governor has yet to deny that on May 17, 2001, at the Peninsula Hotel in Los Angeles, he had consensual political intercourse with Enron chieftain Kenneth Lay. This, by the way, at the same time that Lay was and his Enron firm were deliberately destabilizing California. Continuing. Also frolicking with Arnold and Ken was convicted stock swindler Mike Milken. Now, 34 pages of internal Enron memoranda have just come through this reporter's fax machine, telling all about the tryst between Maria's husband and the corporate con men. It turns out that Schwarzenegger knowingly joined the hush-hush encounter as part of a campaign to sabotage a Davis-Bustamante plan to make Enron and other power pirates then ravaging California pay back the $9 billion in illicit profits that they carried off. Here's a story Arnold doesn't want you to hear. The biggest single threat to Ken Lay and the electricity lords is a private lawsuit filed last year under California's unique Civil Code Provision 17200, the Unfair Business Practices Act, unquote. This litigation, heading to trial now in Los Angeles, would make the power companies return the $9 billion they filched from California electricity and gas customers. It takes real cojones to bring such a suit. Who's the plaintiff taking on the bad guys? Cruz Bustamante, lieutenant governor and reluctant leading candidate against Schwarzenegger. Now, follow the action. 1 month after Cruz brings suit, Enron's Lay calls an emergency meeting in L.A. of his political-backed buddies, including Arnold. Their plan, to undercut Davis according to Enron memos and solve the energy crisis, that is, make the Bustamante legal threat go away. How can that be done? Follow the trail with me. While Bustamante is kicking Enron butt in court, the Davis administration is simultaneously demanding that George Bush's energy regulators order the $9 billion refund. Don't hold your breath. Bush's Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is headed by a guy proposed by Ken Lay. But Bush's boys on the commission have a problem. The evidence against the electricity barons is rock solid. Fraudulent reporting of sales transactions, megawatt laundering, fake power delivery scheduling, and straight-out conspiracy, including meetings and hotel rooms. So the Bush commissioners cook up a terrific scheme. Charge the companies with conspiracy, but offer them behind closed doors deals in which they have to pay only 2 cents on each dollar they filched. The problem? The slap-on-the-wrist refunds won't sail if the governor of California won't play along. Solution? Recall the governor. New problem. The guy most likely to replace Davis is not Mr. Musclehead, but Cruz Bustamante, an even bigger threat to the power companies than Davis. Solution? Smear Cruz, because heaven forbid he took donations from engines instead of Ken Lay. The payoff? Once Arnold is governor, he blesses the sweetheart settlements with the power companies. When that happens, Bustamante's court cases are probably lost. There aren't many judges who will let a case go to trial to protect a state if that state's governor has already allowed the matter to be settled by a regulatory agency. So think about this. The state of California is in the hole by $8 billion for the coming year. That's chump change next to the $8 trillion in deficits and surplus losses planned and incurred by George Bush. Nevertheless, the $8 billion deficit is the hanging rope California's right wing is using to lynch Governor Davis. So yet only Davis and Bustamante are taking direct action to get back the $9 billion that was vacuumed out of the state by Enron, Reliant, Dynegy, Williams Company, and the other Texas bandits who squeezed the state by the bulbs. But if Arnold is selected, it's hasta la vista to the $9 billion. When the electricity emperor's whistle, Arnold comes to the Peninsula Hotel or the governor's mansion, the He-Man turns pussycat and curls up in their lap. Again, what we're witnessing is the triumph of the shill, and it is in and of itself a very fascistic phenomenon in that not only the electricity crisis, but also the car tax were produced by Pete Wilson, and Pete Wilson is the man behind the shill, behind Arnold Schwarzenegger. No sooner has Arnold Schwarzenegger gotten into office, or been selected, really, he's not assumed office yet, than he begins to pay back what was owed. San Francisco Chronicle, Saturday, October 11th, 2003, article by Zachary Coyle, headlined, New Push to Deregulate Energy, subtitled Schwarzenegger Electricity Plan Fuels Fears of Another Debacle. It reads in part, Governor-elect Arnold Schwarzenegger is preparing a push to deregulate the state's... Beginning again. Governor-elect Arnold Schwarzenegger is preparing a push to deregulate the state's electricity markets, a move embraced by business leaders and some energy analysts, but criticized by many Democrats and consumer advocates as a return to the failed policies that sparked California's energy crisis. Although the new governor-elect will be consumed at first with tackling the state's budget woes, his advisors say he will push changes next year aimed at lowering energy costs for industry and large power users while encouraging energy firms to build more plants to help meet rising demand. The actor-turned-politician made little mention of his plan to reduce state regulation of energy markets during the recall race, devoting his time instead to bashing Governor Gray Davis for saddling the state with expensive long-term contracts for power. But with many of those contracts set to expire in the next 2 years, the governor-elect will have to present his solutions or risk facing his own energy crisis, skipping down. Schwarzenegger's energy strategy is being driven by some of the same members of former Governor Pete Wilson's team who led the push for energy deregulation in the mid-1990s. The governor-elect, for example, picked for his transition team Jesse Knight, a former Wilson appointee to the Public Utilities Commission, and a leading proponent of deregulation, skipping down. Deregulation has already cost the state $50 billion, give or take, said Mike Florio, senior attorney for the Utility Reform Network. Why on earth anyone would want to do that again is mystifying to us. Florio also said he was suspicious of Schwarzenegger's idea because former Enron Corporation chairman and CEO Ken Lay met with the actor and others in the spring of 2001 when Lay was pushing deregulation in California. Schwarzenegger has said he doesn't remember details of the meeting. Perhaps he should talk with Greg Palast, and then he might have a clearer recollection of what was said. I would also note that there are very strong indications that the triumph of the shill is a major element in the reelection push for George Bush. And it might be possible that at least initially some of the electricity, the lords of electricity, as Greg Palast puts it, might keep the prices low for a while in order to make Schwarzenegger and, by extension, George Bush look good. And again, no sooner does Arnold Schwarzenegger hit the ground running, the running man, so to speak, then he makes an interesting selection for somebody to come in and begin auditing California's budget. One of the things that is bedeviling California, as is the case with all of the other states in the union, is basically economics. The states are in the worst, all states are in the worst shape they've been in since the Great Depression because of the economic situation nationally and internationally. California is no exception. Schwarzenegger has said that he will not slash education, which is half of the budget, and yet he says he won't raise taxes. So the question has been posed by many observers, how is he going to do what he says he's going to do? Well, here is a clue. Again, San Francisco Chronicle, 10/11/2003, article by Christian Bertelsen, Linda Gledhill, and John Wildermuth of the Chronicle, Dateline, Sacramento, headlined, Audit Falls to Florida's Budget Chief, subtitled, Some Feel California Spending is Already One Big Open Book. It reads in part as follows. Arnold Schwarzenegger announced Thursday that a fiscal advisor to Florida Governor Jeb Bush would oversee the audit of California's spending that the newly elected governor says is needed before he lays out his plans to fix state finances. The task will fall to Donna Arduin, A-R-D-U-I-N, who will take temporary leave as Florida's state budget director to conduct the review. Arduin also worked as budget chief in New York under Republican Governor George Pataki. But Schwarzenegger's insistence on an outside audit is causing many in the Capitol to scratch their heads. California has a highly public budgeting process each year, and the state spending plan is available to anyone who wants to see it. The state also has both a state auditor, who conducts a review of state spending every year, and a nonpartisan analyst who examines the governor's annual budget. Another statewide officer, the state controller, employs 200 auditors that regularly conduct spending inquiries. Skipping down, I realize that this would certainly seem puzzling to some. Why, with a very effective auditing process already in place and the records, albeit massive, phone book length in dimension, are a public record, why would anyone want to bring in the budget chief of the state of Florida under Governor Jeb Bush? Of course, the numbers keeping the state of Florida has been very meticulous and beyond question in recent years. So why would anybody want to do that? This might seem puzzling, but Schwarzenegger has provided a very clear, concise, and articulate explanation for doing this, and I will pass this along to you. Asked what he thought an audit would reveal that could not be found in readily available state documents, Schwarzenegger said, quote, Well, we don't know. We will know very soon of what is in there that we don't know. As you know, that every day there are new surprises that we find. And so we want to really open up the books and not have any surprises, because the only way that you can make good decisions is if you have all the information available, unquote. Got that? Also, more about the Bush-Schwarzenegger link. And again, basically, Schwarzenegger, for all of the everyman, person of the people, Schwarzenegger marketing image. In fact, he has been shilling for not only the Bush administration, but some very, very powerful and cynical and elite interests. San Francisco Chronicle of that same day, Friday, October 10th of 2003, article by Zachary Coyle and Mark Sandelow, Chronicle political writers, ties to Bush clear in transition team. Skipping down, Bush and Schwarzenegger have minimized their links, perhaps not wanting to legitimize Democratic accusations that the recall was a Republican effort orchestrated from Washington. Schwarzenegger asserted Thursday there was, quote, no White House connection, unquote, in his transition team, and Bush has insisted throughout the recall campaign that he was only a spectator watching a fascinating political drama, unquote. Nevertheless, the transition team announced Thursday contains many of Bush's closest California contacts, including four of the seven leaders of Bush's 2000 California campaign, Gerald Parsky, the chairman, Representative David Dreyer of San Dimas, Los Angeles County, and State Senator Jim Brulte of Rancho Cucamonga, San Bernardino County, who co-chaired the campaign, and Eloise Anderson, who served on the Bush 2000 California committee. The transition team also include Bush campaign confidant George Shultz, Matt Fong, the former state treasurer who raised in excess of $100,000 for Bush's 2000 campaign, and Viet Dinh, a former assistant attorney general in Bush's Justice Department. Note that. John Cogan, a Hoover Institution fellow instrumental in developing Schwarzenegger's economic plan, was among Bush's top economic advisors during the campaign and the early days of his administration, which, by the way, may account for the fact that Jeb Bush's state auditor, the Florida state auditor, was called in to audit California's budget. Now, note Viet Dinh. It says here a former assistant attorney general in Bush's Justice Department. What is not mentioned there is that Viet Dinh was basically the author, the primary author of the Patriot Act. There are aspects of the Patriot Act that I agree with, but there are also some very frightening provisions of it, perhaps the most striking permitting the auditing, so to speak, of library books that people have been checking out. One wonders, it is difficult to see anything but a desire to implement repression behind that, although I do think that there are some aspects of the Patriot. One wants to be careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. This administration certainly cannot be counted upon to do that. This comes from the PBS website, www.pbs.org. This is an interview that with a number of people about a speech that was recently given by John Ashcroft, and this was in defense of the Patriot Act. The interview was by Margaret Warner, and one of the people she interviewed was Viet Dinh, and it discusses the Viet Dinh authorship of the Patriot Act. Margaret Warner, now for a closer look at the man at the helm of the Justice Department and the act that has stirred such controversy, we're joined by Viet Dinh, the former Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Legal Policy at the Justice Department. He helped draft the Patriot Act, and he now teaches at the Georgetown University Law Center. And Laura Murphy, director of the Washington National Office of the American Civil Liberties Union. The ACLU has filed suit against the Justice Department over one provision of the Patriot Act. Welcome to you both. So again, one of the people called in by Arnold Schwarzenegger in order to effect his transition team was the author of the Patriot Act. And that, I think, bodes poorly for the future of California. And again, I would note that behind all of the cozy everyman just folks image that's being projected by Schwarzenegger are some very scary things indeed. And again, he's obviously a shill. Before we conclude this side, WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs. WFMU.org/Dave Emery has the more recent For the Record programs streaming, and there's a longer URL with the balance of the programs available for download only. That is linked both to the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website and to the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Note that in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website, there are long, detailed, annotated descriptions of the For the Record programs, and listeners are emphatically encouraged to use those descriptions, both to clarify and enhance your own understanding of this admittedly pedantic, linear format, and also, perhaps even more importantly, to use the information, use the documentation in order to pass the word along via the various media, talk shows, the internet, write letters to elected representatives, and in particular, write letters to the media. Spitfire stocks the various programs that I've done over the years. You can reach them by regular mail, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. That's capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D. The regular mailing address, again, is P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California. Email is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. And again, don't overlook the consummately important Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. I do not get money out of the Spitfire arrangement. That concludes side one of For the Record program number 429, The Triumph of the Shill, being recorded on October 13th of 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.